This morning on Catholic Forum, we're very happy to welcome as my special guests Monsignor John Barris, the Chancellor for the Diocese of Wilmington. Monsignor, welcome to Catholic Forum.
Thank you, Bob.
And also we have Mr. and Mrs. Corsini, Joe and Jackie Corsini. They are the parents of four children. They are residents of Wilmington and belong to St. Mary Magdalene Parish in Wilmington. Joe and Jackie, welcome to Catholic Forum.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Last Sunday in Rome, Padre Pio was canonized a saint. And we're going to talk about Padre Pio this morning on Catholic Forum. We're going to talk about his life. And then Joe and Jackie Corsini are going to share a story of theirs of a miraculous healing that took place thanks to the intercession of Padre Pio and St. John Newman. So we're going to hear Jackie's story, too, a little bit later on this morning. But first, let's talk to Monsignor Barris. Monsignor, just in case our listeners aren't familiar with Padre Pio, who was Padre Pio?
Padre Pio lived from 1887 to 1968, and he was a Capuchin friar who, through God's grace, was given all sorts of charismatic gifts. For instance, in the confessional, he was kind of a modern-day Curia of Ars. He spent hours and hours in the confessional, and he had the gift of being able to read people's hearts in the confessional. He had the stigmata. We know that St. Francis had the stigmata of the wounds of Christ, and Padre Pio had those as well. He had the gift of bilocation, and he was extremely committed to the poor, the sick, and the suffering. And yet, with all these great gifts that he had, he had a great emphasis on just the fundamentals of Catholicism, a love for the Mass, a dedication to mental prayer, and a dedication to the Sacrament of Reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, too, Bob, is that he died in 1968, you know, the year of the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. He's a modern-day saint. Many of us were living during that time. And so it's wonderful that we can go, you know, with the canonization, there's this great opportunity to renew our devotion to this great modern saint.
Tell the story about Padre Pio in your family, Monsignor.
Bob, I come from a family of six kids, and I was born in 1960. And after I was born, my father, who had been an ambulance driver in Italy and Northern Africa and had been in Foggia, you know, the area right close to Padre Pio, had never met Padre Pio, but he had heard about him, and he wrote a letter to Padre Pio after I was born and sent him a picture of the family, my father, my mother, and my four older sisters and myself as a baby, and asking if Padre Pio would accept our family as his spiritual children. Maria Pyle, who was Padre Pio's English secretary, an American, who I hear as her cause is also being promoted, she wrote back to my father, and she said that Padre Pio prayed over the picture of Mr. Barris, Mrs. Barris, and your six children, and accepts you as his spiritual children. But my father was confused by the letter because there were only five children in our family after I had been born. And so he wrote back and kind of boldly said to Miss Pyle, as you can see from the picture, Padre Pio made a mistake. We have only five children. Maria Pyle wrote back and said, "Dear Mr. Barris, I checked with Padre Pio. He is quite sure that there are six." And so my brother Bill came along 2 years later in 1962. That's kind of a low-level Padre Pio story, but it's something that's personal. We have all the letters. I have the letters right here in front of me.
Wow.
And so that's why our family has a great devotion to Padre Pio, just rejoicing in his canonization.
That's great, and I'm sure your father was very relieved that he didn't say you're 12 children. Jackie. Tell us your Padre Pio story, if you would, please. Now, you were ill a few years ago, and why don't you tell us about that?
In January of 1997, I was diagnosed with what they think is autoimmune hepatitis.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I entered the hospital, my liver was in very bad shape. It was 95% diseased and just not working.
Mm.
So when I got there, they said that they would treat me with steroids, and that possibly this would make it better, and if not, I would need a liver transplant.
Mm.
So they went on with that treatment, and there was a big group of doctors trying to make the decision. Half of them thought I should have the transplant right away, and the other half said, "No, let's wait, because I'm young, I have four children." They didn't want to put me through that, of course, if they didn't have to.
Right.
So as time went on, my liver got worse. And
how long were you in the hospital?
I believe I went in January 7th, and I was I left on the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And they were only, they said they would know after 5 days of the treatment if it was going to work. And my liver just continued to get worse. So they decided, they came in and told me that I would have to have a liver transplant. There was no question. And we were just waiting till one became available.
Joe, that must have been really difficult for you and the boys, huh? What was that like? You have how many? You have three boys?
We have three boys.
And a girl?
And a little girl who at that time was one or two.
2 years old.
Oh, gosh.
And I had left the house to live with Jackie in the hospital. And we had family and friends look after the kids. Now, it was a difficult time.
Oh, yeah. So you're at this point where you're waiting for a liver to become available.
Right. And at the time, I had somebody had brought me in a relic for St. John Newman, which I had been praying to St. John Newman. And a good friend of mine had known of a man who had Padre Pio's glove.
Mm-hmm.
And they went and picked him up. He lived in the Northeast at Cherovsky. And he... they brought him to, I was in Einstein Hospital, they brought him to the hospital with the glove, and he placed the glove on my liver, and my sister said a prayer that he had given us. And, you know, I don't know exactly what date that was, I really am not sure, but it was, because my mind, with what had gone on with my liver, your ammonia levels go up and you're in and out of being able to understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was during this time, while praying to St. John and Padre Pio, I thought of them as my friends in heaven. And I pictured these two men, and I just prayed to them constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very interesting experience. It's kind of hard to explain, but I had a lot of peace. You would think in a situation like that, you'd be filled with anxiety. And,
sure, yeah.
And I wasn't.
I was.
And I really was very lucky. Anyway, as I prayed, I felt this hope, even though they were telling me that, no, this is the way it was going to be. There was no possible way that my liver was going to heal. I just had this hope. And I didn't have, it wasn't a specific hope, it was just a hope. And I remember one day just saying that, you know, I was able to actually let go and just put it all into God's hands, and with their intercession, I was totally calm about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, on January 24th, well, actually, they looked at me on the 20th of January and said, you know, you're looking a little bit better. And they wanted to take another liver biopsy, which was unusual because they were sure at that point that they were going to give me a liver. And they took the biopsy on January 21st. They came in and told me that all three pieces of my liver were healthy. And then on January 23rd, I was out of the hospital.
That is amazing. What did your doctor say?
He walked in the room and he said, there was three of them, and it was this, Dr. Munoz was my main doctor, and he said...
Can I interject for a second? Because this same doctor... earlier had said nothing short of a miracle will let you leave this hospital without a liver transplant.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I could not let go of. My wife let go of it and found peace. I could not. I was very anxious and upset that this is the way we were heading. However, I'll let you continue.
So your doctors came into your room?
Oh, yeah. They came in, and he said, you know, they're smiling, and they're giving me this information in their disbelief on their own faces. And I stood up, and I said, should I kiss you now? That's what I said. And I got out of bed, and he said, you don't think I had anything to do with this, do you? Now, when I went back to his office later on, I think he forgot all that.
Yeah.
I think he just said, well, I guess the medicine kicked in late. But he was very confused. He sent me home with medicine that I really didn't need.
Yeah.
But I took it anyway. And he didn't know what to make of it. But there were many doctors that were working on this, and the transplant group were probably the most shocked, because their faces were just... the one doctor had come in and said, you could be dead in 72 hours. And he had a D-E-A-D, dead. And so when I went back in for my first appointment, I said, A-L-I-V-E.
That's great. That's great. And you've been fine since then?
I have, yes.
Good, good.
Fine.
And how did... how has that changed? I mean, obviously, something like that would change your life.
Yeah.
Just briefly.
I would have to say that I felt a real connection to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I did feel, and it's very hard to explain, and even now, because I'm kind of back on earth, whereas there I felt like I was somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
I came out of the whole experience thinking it was a wonderful experience. And when people, I would tell people that, I think they would think it was crazy.
Right.
But because of the whole way I felt, the feeling of God's presence and the love and the connection that I felt that everybody in heaven was so close and cared and was praying for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Padre Pio and St. John Newman were very... very close by.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that their intercession was what got me well.
Mm. It must have been a happy time for you and the children, Joe, too, huh?
Most definitely, yes.
Yeah. Monsignor Barris, tell us a little bit about Padre Pio. I mean, some of the extraordinary things that he did while he was alive and since he has gone to heaven. But tell us about his teachings. What did some of the things that he would advocate?
Bob, I would think, you know, with all the fascination with the beautiful stories of Padre Pio in terms of the stigmata, his charismatic gifts in the confessional, the most dramatic of the bilocation, I think Padre Pio would always steer us back to the fundamentals of the Catholic faith, that is, you know, frequent use of the sacrament of reconciliation. He spent hours and hours in the confessional. Pilgrims from all over the world would come for the privilege to have him hear their confession. His great, and so many people came to him to his Mass, the beauty, the reality of his Mass, his sense of the Mass being a miracle in our midst, and his emphasis on mental prayer. Here's a beautiful quotation from Padre Pio, which I think summarizes just some of his spiritual teaching. He says, "Ahead, courage, in the spiritual life, he who does not advance goes backward. It happens as with a boat, which always must go ahead. If it stands still, the wind will blow it back. When you do not succeed in meditating well, do not for this reason cease to do your duty. If there are many distractions, do not lose heart. Make a meditation of patience. You will profit all the same. Fix the time, the length of your meditation, and do not rise from your place until you have finished it, even at the cost of being crucified. While assisting at Mass, renew your faith. Have your mind elevated to the mystery that is happening before your eyes. Go with your mind to Calvary and think and meditate on the victim who offers himself to divine justice, absorbing the price of your redemption. If you want to assist and pray at Mass with devotion and with fruit, think of the sorrowful mother at the feet of Calvary. Prayer is the best weapon we possess, the key that opens the heart of God." And I think Padre Pio is a real international saint. There's great devotion to him everywhere. But I remember when I was studying in Rome, and I actually had the opportunity to go to his beatification in May of 1999, and it was packed. There were people all the way back to the Tiber River. But I can remember walking back from a meeting of priests and walking through on the way back to the Casa Santa Maria, the North American College, past Santa Maria Sopra Minerva. There's an Italian high school, and I can remember suddenly spotting on the ground a wallet. And so I opened the wallet to get the identification of who this might be so I could turn it into the Carabinieri, the Italian police. And it was an Italian teenager, a young woman from this Italian high school. And you could tell she was a very contemporary teenager. But as you kind of, I found a photograph of Padre Pio, probably taken by someone in her family, maybe a grandfather who had gone to San Giovanni Rotunda to hear his Mass or to go to confession. But it spoke volumes to me about Padre Pio and the consciousness of Italy, and the fact that this very contemporary Italian teenager would have this picture of Padre Pio in her wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And it would mean something very deeply to her. And speaking to Italians, you had the sense that Every Italian loves Padre Pio, even people who don't care for the institutional church or have some sort of hostility to the institutional church love Padre Pio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Padre Pio has a special role in terms of bringing back Catholics who have been inactive in their faith, who may maybe drifted in their faith, great role in terms of helping to bring them back through his intercession. Padre Pio also had great affection for Americans. There's a great story in World War II. The American Air Force put a base in the strategic location of Foggia, very close to San Giovanni Rotunda. And many of the American servicemen had a chance to go over and to hear Padre Pio's mass, to go to confession to him. And they bring many parables and stories of Padre Pio's intercession and their own experience of him. So Padre Pio has a great affection for Americans. And I think he has, we can go to him with the difficulties we're experiencing in our church in America these days. We can go to Padre Pio and ask his intercession to help to lead us through it.
We could probably do a couple of weeks worth of interviews on Padre Pio. We've just kind of scratched the surface. But Monsignor, just briefly, if you could tell our listeners where they could go for more information about Padre Pio.
I think practical things that people can do to follow up and learning more about Padre Pio, any Catholic bookstore has a wide array of biographies on Padre Pio. I can remember a beautiful biography by a Lutheran minister. He has an ecumenical and interreligious appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find in these biographies a lot of inspiration for living your spiritual life, living your family life in a deep Catholic spirit, and living your life in society. Also, with the great opportunities on the internet, all you have to do is plug in Padre Pio in your search, and believe me, you'll have everything from the Vatican website to all sorts of beautiful web pages about Padre Pio. Also, I just invite people to consider the possibility of a pilgrimage to San Giovanni Rotunda, where Padre Pio is buried, where he established his House of Suffering, a hospital for people who are sick. It's something that can be easily tied in with a pilgrimage to Rome, to Assisi. It's only about 3 or 4 hours from Rome. So that would be something I think people derive a lot of spiritual benefit from.
Mm-hmm. And Jackie, earlier, before we started the interview, you mentioned a place kind of close by where people can go.
Yes. There's a National Center for Padre Pio. It's on Old Route 100 in Bartow, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. How far is that from Wilmington?
I think it's a little over an hour.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Great. Well, thanks so much. Thanks, Monsignor John Barris, Chancellor for the Diocese of Wilmington, for being my guest here this morning on Catholic Forum. And a special thank you to Joe and Jackie Corsini for coming on the program today and sharing your wonderful story with us. We really appreciate you doing so.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.